Where's the recording form?
Where? Was that the one?
That was the orange one.
You gave me?
Yeah.
Thank you. Athletic. Was kind of an SMD there from family to family on the periodic table. And so basically made a point of test data, made a diagram of like how data showed that from family one to heavy metals, the SMD increased with heavy metal, family one being pH of 5.49, the average pH. Family two being 5.7, transition metals being 5.19, and then the most acidic heavy metal is being 2.52. So we concluded that basically SCP increases going to the right on the periodic table. And then for the second part, we're asked Na plus or Mg2 plus, which one would be more acidic and basically why. And looking on the periodic table, Mg2 plus is more to the right than Na plus, so we said that Mg2 plus would be more acidic. And then the third part was asking, would it be preferable to apply Li, Mn, or Ca sulfate to the solid ground? And it tells us the solid ground is acid loving, so the most acidic would be the best one, which would be Mn, since it's also more to the right than the other two elements.
For the last one, we spoke in broad picture about the formation of the acid, actually. So basically what happened is, like, as Nadia concluded earlier, that as it moves to the right of the periodic table, it becomes more acidic. And it also increases the electronegativity. As you can see from here, that as you move to the right, it will increase. There are some exceptions, but trend is generally like that. So the main cause is like, because like the more electronegativity, it's like it will attract more electrons. So the hydrogen will be more positive with respect to the oxygen atom. So you tend to lose, not the hydrogen atom, you will tend to get out of the molecules and form with another water molecules to form the hydromium ions, which is the H2O plus. This basically explains why we increase the acidity of the solution. And for the last one, we are asked to explain the relationship between the charge density with the acidity. So basically, we define the density as the positive charge divided by the ionic radius, which is given here, 0.81, something like that. So it, as you can see that as we move from left to right, the radius decreases. Excluding the groups that excluding the halogens. So the charge is basically the same, but as radius decreases, so it will increase. So this is the explanation is the same as the electronegativity. Any question?
What kinds of observation or shifts in properties allow you to ensure that a complexation of the reaction is occurring? So, this first part. I put before the word, but I have the order different, so ignore the first word. So, our color change is an indication of complexation for our transition metals, post-transition metals, excluding zinc and aluminum. And that way, examples out here are copper reaction for the compensation.
Yeah, the reason that we exclude zinc from this condition is that zinc originally has a full, the zinc 2 plus originally has two full D shells. So it itself is colorless. So there won't be any color change even if we have any complex properties, because there will be no shift of color or wavelength.
Okay, he's actually talking about the second question here, which is Zn2 plus exists in aqueous solution of complex CnH2O4. Zinc will complex with ammonia. Based on your answer, predictable change will be observed if you perform procedure 1 with Zn2 plus instead of copper as usual. And here we have for zinc, if the nitrate and base form precipitate, which disappears upon adding more base, maybe infer that complexation has occurred. This is confirmed by reappearance of precipitates when strong acid, when we use that nitric acid, is added to the mixture.
Question?
So, don't go away yet. You said that you can infer color change for post-transition also? That's what you have written
down? Yeah, we have for our transition metals and post-transition metals excluding
those. I thought post-transition metals don't have color.
I mean, actually we're saying we are excluding those without color.
Like aluminum.
Yeah. Actually, they're more than that, more than those two. Which are colorless ions.
Yeah, so how do you infer that? What are the two ways you can infer a complexation reaction with post-transition models if they're colorless?
If we add base to cations, and it goes to, the charge goes to zero, and a precipitate will form. And then when we add acid back, the charge will come back, the positive charge will come back. So it will.
That doesn't necessarily apply to the complex one. It means that you're just reversing the precipitation reaction, right? So how do you, the way that you would infer that a post-transition metal from the complex is by the addition of excess base and seeing it start with the precipitate and then going to it, the precipitate disappearing with the addition of the same base.
Okay. We know that about the zinc. Maybe going
forward with the charge, instead of charging the opposite way.
Yeah, but you want to make it more general for the all of those transitions because they are colorless, right? So then the acid actually is a way to test if something has already complexed, right? If you can put acid into it and see if it's going to take them back, it must be complex. That's our term, right? Yes. Especially about making inferences as to whether they complex or not, because we haven't really tested that in lab. The post-transitions are very easy because you see, the transitions are very easy because you see a change in color, right? And if you remember from spectral analysis of solutions, that when you add NH3 to any solution that contains transition metals, you get a shift of the absorbance peak toward the lower wavelengths and a corresponding deeper color of solution than beforehand, or a complete change in color of solution. Right? So that's how you infer NH3 complexation.
You can also, if you add OH, we've learned that OH is a stronger you can see it in H3 complex with a heavy metal, a post-transition metal or element. If you had a charged item on and forming precipitate, you add an H3 and it dissolved again, that would prove it. But you guys systematically studied that kind of thing. I mean, you did some experiments like it, but you know, if it doesn't dissolve, that doesn't tell you whether or not it was complex or not. You know, just,
part 3 of this experiment was intended to specifically show you that certain things can and cannot complex, but predicting whether complex is post-transition, we haven't
done.
So, question, oh, sorry.
Just say you're going out, just do that, because like, I'm going out Friday and Saturday night.
Oh, I think I know what you're going to do. Are you speaking in reference to like aluminum plus 3? Are you continually add base to super-simple and see how much?
No, it's oxalate.
I don't know what Saturday. He was like, so you're like getting some entire time. You want to get this whole?
I
want to get some up here.
Yeah, I want to get some up here.
Got the help because I'm a friend because I'm a people.
Yeah, actually, those two are really good for maintaining it in the first place, but Lewis basis is dependent on the species, and it doesn't necessarily imply that it'll form a precipitate if it's a good Lewis base. So NH3 is an extremely good Lewis base, so it can displace that precipitating agent pretty readily for most things. And as we'll see further in this discussion, you'll notice that in part 3, actually, there's a preference for which metals on the periodic table will show that tendency to precipitate or to complex with NH3 or OH.
So if like the precipitating agent doesn't really
attack
the results,
but it
sort of does, right?
So it's kind of like a marker. It's kind of like a way for you to see what affects what metals,
right?
What will complex with what metals. For instance, you do a precipitation reaction, you have a layer of precipitate there. Now, in order to dissolve that precipitate, it has a charge zero. In order to dissolve that precipitate, you're going to have to put something on there that's non-charged, that's going to let the charge come back to the thing so it can go back in the solution. So it'll displace the precipitating agent, right? That thing that's going to displace it will be whatever Lewis base is going to be most favored for that metal ion that's precipitated. Whatever it wants to complex with will make it go back in solution.
Yeah, I think the best way to think about it is if you have a precipitate and you pour base on it and that precipitate disappears, then you know that whatever you poured on it was a better Lewis base. Okay, so if you were given a list of Lewis bases from greatest to weakest, you would say, okay, well, the greatest one would dissolve a precipitate formed with a weaker one, right? You probably won't see anything like that on a test or anything because that concept's kind of vague from this experiment, but that's just the way it happens.
So should we see differences also in the same metal and the same base?
Could you repeat that question?
Like, if we had like aluminum 3 plus and NH3 and a different precipitating agent, should we see different results?
Probably not. Unless the precipitating agent was a stronger Lewis base than what precipitated aluminum. See what I mean? Yeah. NH3 is actually one of the best Lewis bases. So, in OH minus, actually, if you recall from, I think, procedure 1 or 2 from part 2, you can infer that NH3 is a better Lewis base than OH minus. For the transition metals, I believe.
For the transition metals.
Yeah.
Right. And then every single part of here.
Right.
You see that. Anyways, anyone else have a question? Okay, part 3, question 3.
Oh,
Okay, so the first part is there a link between a cation tendency to conflict with OH or NH3 and the acidity of the cation? And basically what we think is that the more acidic or the lower the pH, the more likely it is to complex. And what we did for the chart, for both of the charges, we combined the precipitate to complex and the complex. We combined those two areas, and so you can kind of, by doing that, you can kind of see the trends. Since we ordered the areas to be least reactive to the more reactive, no reaction, obviously no reaction. Precipitate, there's somewhat of a reaction, and the precipitate, the complex and the complex, both of the data was a little weird, so we were having trouble finding the trends, and that's why we combined the two, so you can kind of see the trends in both. The only thing, though, is that the one thing to point out is that between the heavy and the transition, just the way the data was laid out, you can definitely say that the conclusion is true for the NaOH. However, you can't necessarily say it for the NH3 just because of this one right here. This one actually did form a precipitate, so it doesn't quite follow, but that's more or less true.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, as a general rule, could you say that heavy metals and transition metals together complex more often than family 1 and 2 together?
Yes.
Okay. Actually, I'd like to make a quick note. Transition, NaOH. You see that some people reported a precipitate to complex. Only true for zinc. Not true for any of the others that we tested. It's impossible. It was a misinterpretation of the experiment that led to that data point. So bear that in mind.
Since it's a transition metal, it's going to form a complexation reaction, and
either going to form a precipitate or precipitate to complex with an NaOH, which is what you see there.
And we didn't get any results that it just formed a precipitate with ammonia, so it's going to complex.
The last part of the question, lead is extremely toxic in humans. Lead poisoning is usually treated with chlorinating agent, substance that can form stable complex and ions, and offer an explanation for why this is effective. Because you add these chlorinating agents, then the lead is stable and it doesn't react with any of the chemicals that are in the human body, and then it can be excreted through the body without harming you if it is done soon enough. Give the explanation why they do that, so that it's stable.
Any questions?
Any questions?
I cannot emphasize how important it is for you to realize that only zinc can go from a precipitate to complex. None of the other transition metals will. Okay?
NOH.
With NOH. And A is NOH.
Okay. So, you will not see precipitate complexes of transition metals with NaOH. Good. It's only with NaOH. Well, that doesn't really work. And will not see precipitate with NaOH. So, the solvent change, yeah, the precipitate can change, but you're not going to see precipitate with transition metals.
If you had copper hydroxide and you had more hydroxide, should have lead in your complex. It stays precipitate. So what, how people interpreted that was when they had acid.
Alright, our question was, can you predict the salt solubility in base if you know the cation's acidity?
Okay. We're also supposed to summarize the class data for part three. And basically what we're doing in part three was considering whether the process of converting an insoluble metal compound to soluble complex is more related to the cation's acidity or to its ability to complex with NH3 or OH-. And so we have to take our information from our first and second part of the lab to make our hypothesis, which basically found that the pH is going to increase on the left side of the periodic table, which is in this part, and then you see family 1 has a higher pH average, and then it decreases to the right. And then also, as was just discussed with the recent groups, the reactions with NaOH or NH3+. So then in part three, what we did was we kind of compared the both of them to come up with how, when it's combined with an insoluble metal compound, if the precipitate would then be soluble. And we found that in family 1, it was very soluble, and we never even had precipitate when we mixed it, so that was kind of easy. And then in family 2, it never dissolved, and we always had a precipitate. And then in the transitions in the heavy metals, it depended on whether it was mixed with NH3 or NaOH, but it didn't necessarily matter what the metal compound was, because in all cases of NH3, the precipitate was dissolved. For the transition metals and for the heavy metals, in all cases of NaOH, the precipitate was dissolved. So based on this information, we would, as far as predicting salt solubility, if we know the cation's acidity, we would say if we know the cation's acidity, then we could place it into an area on the periodic table, as we've seen. If it's a higher pH, then we're going to assume that it's going to be in the family 1 area, which then we would predict would be very soluble. Whereas if it's got a low pH, then we would assume that it's towards the heavy metal, the heavy end, and then we would think that it would be soluble in NaOH. Or if it's a little higher, then we think it would be transition, then it would be soluble in NH3. And that would also be fairly easy to test, because that's, you remember in the lab, because you just kind of mix the two together and see which one it is. So it would also be useful by identifying whatever it is that you're trying to make soluble.
Second part of our question is, it says that Ni2 plus is acidic and forms complexes with NH3. So can you draw a picture depicting the Lewis acid base reaction between and reaction between an Ni2 plus and NH3? And it says Mg2 plus is slightly acidic and water and does not complex with OH minus or NH3. Does this fact support your answer?
Okay, the first part, drawing the reaction. We've got our nickel 2 plus combining with an NH3, which is a Lewis base and has two electrons that it can share with this Lewis acid, which wants some. And the result of this reaction is nickel and the NH3. We think there's still going to be the 2 plus charge there. And supposedly, depending on the number of waters that were originally complexed with the nickel, we'll have that same number with the NH3.
Same number of molecules.
Yeah, but we didn't get that information for the question, so whatever it is would be
six.
Okay.
So if it's six in that case, it's going to be Ni, and then it's going to have six water molecules attached to that, and then the NH3 is going to react with that, and then this is going to replace right here, it's going to be Ni, and it's going to be NH3 subscript 6 with a charge of plus 2, then you're going to have those six waters added on to the product side.
Indeed. The second part of the question was about magnesium 2 plus, and it said that it was slightly acidic, and our average was 5.73, and it should not complex. So we gathered a little more information on it. It's from family 2. And when combined with NH3, we get no reaction. And when combined with NaOH, we get a precipitate and then a complex. And this right here, the combination with NaOH, does not support this conclusion. So we got a yes and a no. So we don't know what to make of that. This is from the data.
Do you have a copy of the data?
What we used was to determine this because it wasn't mixed with an insoluble metal. We used part 2 when we were just mixing it with NH3 and NaOH, which based, I don't know if the group of 4 pi is better data just depicting that, but that's what we have right here. It's family 2 with NaOH, which is a complex with no reaction with NH3. And that's why we got it.
Solubility in a base and have the cation tendency to form complexes. So what we did is we looked at the data from part two to see what the tendency of each cation was to form a complex in either NaOH or NH3. And we saw that family 1s didn't form complexes in either base because there was no precipitate at all. Family 2 didn't form a complex in either one. Transition cations form complexes in NH3 and heavy metals form complexes in NH4. In NH3, we also noticed that, or in the transition cations, we noticed that there was a split in the fast zeta between precipitate and precipitate to complex in the NaOH solution. We think this error was probably because a lot of the teams didn't know the difference between what a precipitate was versus what a precipitate to complex was, where it should have been just a precipitate. And the same thing for heavy metals in NH3.
And then knowing the cation tendency to form a complex has allowed us to predict its salt solubility. Because if a cation forms a complex in a certain base, its salt will dissolve in that base. So since family one cations didn't form a complex in anything, they didn't precipitate, and therefore there's nothing to dissolve, so they didn't dissolve in either base. Family two cations form precipitates in both K2CO3 and K2C2O4. But because they didn't form a complex in either NaOH or NH3, neither of these precipitates dissolve. And the family three elements form precipitates, again, with both of the precipitating reagents. And since we know they form complexes in NH3, we know that the salts were soluble in NH3. And for the heavy metals, we had to precipitate with both precipitating reagents and form a complex in NaOH, therefore it was soluble in NaOH.
Okay, the second part says the lead 2 plus ion has a pronounced tendency to react with proteins and interferes with the biosynthesis of hemoglobin in humans. Fair likelihood of finding lead ions rather than precipitate lead compounds in water or low versus high pH. Lead is a heavy metal, and heavy metals are found to be highly acidic, so you would probably find lead ions in acidic solution, and you would find the lead compounds in basic solution. Well, that's considered acidic. I mean, if you add acid and acid, nothing should happen, right?
So it would therefore be more soluble in NaOH, right, which is a base.
Yeah.
Right, so that's a basic solution. So an acidic solution is just the opposite. It's going to form compounds with the leftover conjugate bases from the acid.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's
the best I can do. Yeah, but it's just a definition of the base, right? Base is a high concentration of OH minus, which means that post transition is soluble. That's key. So, did everyone understand that?
No.
Okay, so PB, 2 plus, where is it? Post transition or transition?
Post
transition. So, what is it more soluble?
From the experiment.
NaOH, right? Sodium hydroxide. What defines a basic solution?
What is the definition of a base?
What is the definition of a basic solution? High concentration of OH minus ions, right? So therefore, with an increased concentration of OH minus ions, it can form stable complexes with lead. Right? Because lead's more soluble in NaOH. Is that clear? No? Yes.
Yeah, if you get the lead solution, what happens if you put like nitric acid in it?
I think chemically it would be precipitated, but you get less solubility. There'd be less of the lead. I don't know if it would precipitate out.
It may. It wouldn't precipitate. See, you chose the wrong acid. If you chose, I think, H2SO4, it would precipitate, I think. But nitric acid, nitrates are always soluble, so
yeah.
You don't really have an anion that can precipitate it out.
Okay.
But, so that's
yeah.
Okay.
All right. Lead groups 3 and 4 are doing question 6, right?
Well, Come on down.
Part of our question was to present our interpretation of the reaction of copper sulfate and potassium iodide. Okay, we believe that, okay, first of all, we observed that a white PPT in brown solution was observed. Then after that, we believe that the iodide was oxidized from I- to I2, and copper was reduced from Cu2 plus to Cu plus. And we checked from referring to the CRC handbook, we found that the only possible PPT between copper 2 plus and iodide minus is copper iodide, which is CuI. Okay, in order to confirm our observation, we did two experimental tests, which is copper sulfate plus potassium nitrate, to prove that iodide is needed to form the PPT, and sodium sulfate plus potassium iodide to show that Cu2 plus is needed to form the PPT. When we add hexane to the solution forms two layers, a purple layer, which we assume that is hexane plus iodine, and a brown layer, which is water and copper iodide. And when we check again from the CRC handbook, we found that Cu I is brownish, insoluble, and soluble in ammonia, which matches our prediction. And that's it.
All right, the second part of our question states, is a fact when NH3 is added to a precipitate of CuCO3, the precipitate dissolves? And they want us to offer an explanation based on our investigation of the reaction and the knowledge gained from the facts built in part 3. All right, there's a few things to keep in mind when we think about the reaction, and that is that Lewis acids want to join with the best possible Lewis base that they're in solution with. In this reaction, Cu plus 2 is a Lewis acid, and NH3 is a much better Lewis base than the carbonate. So therefore, the Cu plus 2 will break away from the carbonate in order to join with the NH3 to form the complex ion shown there, which happens to be soluble, and that will cause the precipitate to break up and disappear because the copper is no longer joined with the carbonate.
Can you erase that? You're going to talk about the
bottom. Okay. Then we checked our data in part 3 to confirm this, and it's a little hard to read, but it's a chart in the left box. It's just saying that we're using a transition cation, copper plus 2. And in our reference test, we precipitated it. We got a cloudy blue precipitate. The addition of NaOH did not cause the precipitate to go away, but when we added the NH3, the precipitate did indeed go away. Any questions?
Could you put your transparency up from the reaction part 4? Could you explain what role the NH3 plays?
It basically forces the reverse redox from Cu plus to Cu2 plus.
Okay, and in doing that, what's your observation for the hexane layer? What happens to the hexane layer? Does it become clear? Does it stay purple?
It became clear.
It became clear. Yeah. Why?
Because the I minus was able to become I2 again, and since I2, the reverse, I2 became I minus.
Right, it was back in the solution. Yeah. So the NH3 kind of served as a driving force of forcing the reaction backward, which, by the way, isn't contrary to what we've been telling you all along about redox, that reactions only go in one direction, because in this case you actually have something that's aiding in that, where in general, redox reactions can't go backwards just as they are. Does that make sense?
The real reason for this reaction going backwards is is up for debate. The people who don't study this kind of thing but were chemists can argue about it. But you don't have to know why it happened, just that it did. Just that you observed it going backward and forward. You added acid and went back again. It just shows you that there's a Lewis complex, Lewis acid-base reaction. Don't worry about today. It's going to be fun. Everyone has the most fun in this reaction. You're going to be given reactions, and it's up to you to figure out. We're not going to tell you anything more than to do the reaction, and it's going to be up to you to fill it out. We'll go into more detail on how you're going to fill all this out when you get down there. You're only going to be writing up 4 reactions today and presenting the 5th. But we'll go over that in class and you can fill out the sheets. Please remember to turn in your sheets up front, your grading sheets, and finish those.
Please, none of my students leave yet.
Oh yeah. We also need you to fill out these evaluation forms.
Yes.
Sorry. No quiz today. You just thought we'd say that, tell you that now, so you can fill out this evaluation. That's a joke. Right.
It looks shorter. Like you got it layered right here. But
yeah. No, I'm not getting ready.
Sorry. Okay. Well, then I'm just an idiot. Don't pay any attention. Thank you.
Huh? We need to discussion. And for my students, come up here because it'll just be easier for me to pass these out. I'm not supposed to go to your seat or anything like that. I need some of the volunteers in this
But you're the only person I know that like is in the class but doesn't have to take the exam.
Can you come and fill out the
evaluation?
If
you have any comments to make, please make them on the back. It'll help me and Mike, you've got a teacher. These evaluations are not for Nancy, they're just for me and Mike. You'll be filling out an evaluation for Nancy later on. I don't want to see them. Give them up here in the yellow envelope. Only my students should be putting in the envelope that says Deanne Taylor. Mike's envelope's up here, and you put it in Mike's envelope. And hold on 1 second. And when you're done, filling out the evaluations, put them in the appropriate envelope, and you can leave.
Yeah. I'm not sure about this, too, but this one is the exception.
The thing is,
Okay, so I have somebody else here.
Right now. I'm not even with my brother.